Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
All right, it was my turn this week and I picked a story. It's the first in a collection by Carmen Maria Machado. The collection's called Her Body and Other Parties, and this first story in the collection is called The Husband Stitch. I hadn't read this before. I was looking for just short stories that were a little more modern. I was hoping to read something like within the last like 10 to 20 years, you know? So this is pretty recent and it includes like an old wives' tale. I don't even know what you would call it anymore, about women with who, about a woman who has a green ribbon around her neck, which I had heard this before. So when I
Oh,
read
really?
this, yeah, I've seen it in like comic strips and like little horror movies and like horror comics, and I was familiar enough with it that I thought, oh, this will probably be the most like in-depth exploration of it, because it feels a little bit like a not a trope, but like a symbol more than like the crux of a story. So I'm gonna read a section here on page 20 of this story. That night, after my son is in bed, my husband reaches his hand across the couch and slides it up my leg. Come to me, he says, and I twinge with pleasure. I slide off the couch, smoothing my skirt very prettily as I shuffle over to him on my knees. I kiss his leg, running my hand up to his belt, tugging him from his bonds before swallowing him whole. He runs his hands through my hair, stroking my head, groaning and pressing into me, and I don't realize that his hand is sliding down the back of my neck until he is trying to loop his fingers through the ribbon. I gasp and pull away quickly, falling back and frantically checking my bow. He's still sitting there, slick with my spit. Come back here, he says. No, I say, you'll touch my ribbon. And he stands up and tucks himself into his pants, zipping them up. A wife, he says, should have no secrets from her husband. I don't have any secrets, I tell him. The ribbon. The ribbon is not a secret, it's just mine. Were you born with it? Why your throat? Why is it green? I do not answer. He is silent for a long minute. Then, a wife should have no secrets. My nose grows hot. I do not want to cry. I've given you everything you have ever asked for, I say. Am I not allowed this one thing? I want to know. You think you want to know, I say, but you don't. Why do you want to hide it from me? I'm not hiding it. It just isn't yours. He gets down very close to me, and I pull back from the smell of bourbon. I hear a creak, and we both look up to see our son's feet vanishing up the staircase. When my husband goes to sleep that night, he does so with a hot and burning anger that falls away as soon as he is truly dreaming. I am up for a long time listening to his breathing, wondering if perhaps men have ribbons that do not look like ribbons. Maybe we are all marked in some way, even if it's impossible to see. The next day, our son touches my throat and asks about my ribbon. He tries to pull at it, and though it pains me, I have to make it forbidden to him. When he reaches for it, I shake a can full of pennies. It crashes discordantly, and he withdraws and weeps. Something is lost between us, and I never find it again. If you are reading this story out loud, prepare a soda can full of pennies. When you arrive at this moment, shake it loudly in the face of the people closest to you. Observe their expression of startled fear and then betrayal. Notice how they never look at you exactly the same way for the rest of your days.
You got the can?
I should have. Yeah, so I felt like that section was a version of that happens like three or four times throughout the story, right? Where the husband tries to take the ribbon off. And it's usually like when they're having sex, and it's almost always like startling to the wife that way, where she's already being so vulnerable, and then he wants to like take this thing off of her that she's explicitly said in the opening scenes. She's like, yeah, I have this ribbon, like, I don't know. Don't touch it.
Is there a real world? You were saying that there's like a trope about ribbons, but is there a real world thing about these green ribbons?
Yeah, I don't think there's a real world thing. I'll look
Okay.
it up again.
Because I read it as just like a thing in the story. I didn't realize it was drawing from a larger tradition.
It's not unique to this story,
Okay.
is mostly what I know. And when it's in stories, it's always around the woman's neck and it's always a secret and it always ends with it being taken off. And usually it's like in this way where the woman finally like gives up and says like, okay, either she takes it off or like lets someone take it off. It's not usually like this violent thing that's like the threat the whole time. I mean, to give away the ending though, at the end she lets her husband, she's like, if you really want to know, go ahead, take it off. Like, you've given me a wonderful life and a wonderful son. And by this point, their kid has graduated and they're like empty nesters. And she's like, you know, aside from this thing that he repeatedly does, like, my husband's been great and I'll let him in on this secret. And he takes it off of her. And we don't see her dying, but her head literally. rolls off her body. It's what's holding her together. And he's horrified, obviously. There's always like an element in the stories where the woman either does know for sure what would happen or like suspects what would happen if she took it off, but just kind of like knows that she shouldn't. And then it symbolizes like women having secrets, right? Or women having anything private to themselves.
Yeah, that's how I read this, is just like as a symbol, basically, of like exactly what you said, some private thing that women have for themselves.
Right.
And so the story is about him trying to like jam himself into that privacy.
Right. This story, I think, does a good job. And that's why I was kind of interested in it, because I do think it delves a little bit deeper. This story does a good job of showing us that this truly is the only private thing. So this is her basically high school sweetheart. She doesn't cheat on him ever. The one time she thinks about like having like an intimate moment with another woman, she tells her husband about it immediately. He's there when she gives birth. This story is called the husband stitch because after she gives birth, like this is a real medical procedure. Well, they'll add another stitch and it makes sex better for the men afterwards. So stuff like that is like really messed up, and it's like really vulnerable and intimate. Like her husband knows everything about her body except for this one ribbon, and everything about her life, which is like very much like in service to their family. And it's still like not enough. So I liked how, like I said, this just went a little bit deeper. It showed you that this is not a story about a woman that's keeping a secret from her husband. This is a story about a woman that's trying to preserve any part of herself for herself, and she doesn't have it. The scene where she thinks that maybe she's got a thing for this woman is interesting, because she takes an art class, and it's like she's like got postpartum depression, and someone tells her, you know, like when I felt that way, I went and took an art class. So she goes and takes an art class, and they're of course drawing like nude figures, and one of them's a woman, and the woman has like a ribbon on her body. And so our main character is just like enamored by this. She like has to know more, and then they go out for coffee, and it's almost like she mistakes the intimacy, like the emotional intimacy, for like, oh, I want to have sex with this person, right? She feels like she's betrayed her husband somehow, because she finally met someone that like maybe understands her on a different level. And so when she tells her husband, he's like all horned up about it. He's like, oh yeah, wow, you want to have sex with a woman, that's great. She's like, okay, I'm glad that that's how he's interpreting this, because now I can forget about it too. But yeah, it's like everything is like laid bare in her life, and she's got this one thing that really stresses her out, and he still has to have it. So yeah, I like I said, I've encountered this green ribbon thing so much that when I saw this, I was like, oh, now's my chance to kind of get an answer. And what I kind of like about it is that it still frustrates you by the end. We still don't know why she's got the ribbon, why she was born with it. She's not even aware totally. We just know that the consequence is that when she does share this final piece of herself, like there's nothing left of her, you know, whether she dies or not.
It's interesting that like when her son is born, she's like, I checked for a ribbon, no ribbon, it was a boy, right? And then when she's taking the art class, and the women models come in, she's like spies, oh, she's got a ribbon, and somebody else had a ribbon at some
like
other
on
moment.
Their finger, yeah,
on their finger. So there's a ribbon around an ankle, it's like yellow, and then the ribbon around the finger. That's why I was asking about the ribbon, because you specifically said it's green around the neck, but she's like, there's other ribbons in other places. Obviously we're not going to be able to know what those ribbons are all about, but they seem to just be another manifestation of that symbol of privacy, symbol of like feminine privacy.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the what was the story that we read about the glove making?
Oh, Mary Robinette Kowal is the author. It had a long name.
Well, so in that story, we know specifically about like the gloves that the main character is wearing. But by the end, there's scenes where they're pointing to the fact that like, well, this woman wears these gloves because they're helping her with her fertility. And like this woman wears these gloves because they're like, they have these other magical properties. And it kind of reminded me of that when you talk about like, oh, this woman has a yellow ribbon on her ankle. Like, I'm sure we could really read into this. And I'm sure maybe those were chosen intentionally, and maybe they signify other little private things, right? The fact that like they're placed differently on the woman and like of different colors. I think what you're supposed to kind of take away is that these are like secrets or things of like a different like flavor each time, you know?
Yeah, because it's individual. It's for each one has their own private whatever it is. And I would say as if you're writing a story like this, you don't have to even know.
No.
You don't have to have like a system developed to like identify what each thing is. I mean, it'd be fun to kind of like have it in the back of your head, like, oh, this yellow is going to mean this, but you don't have to put it in the story. You can just like...
No, it doesn't matter. Because the whole point is, like we said, by the end, even as a reader, we're kind of frustrated. I'm at least like reading this and I'm like, okay, so there is no meaning other than it's a secret. And there's no secret other than you don't get to know.
Well, the section you read, she's like, I don't have secrets. That's like, I like the word privacy or private, because it doesn't feel like a secret because everyone can see the ribbon. It's just, just don't touch it. Don't ask about
right.
it.
Right. Her husband is kind of like missing the point, right? There's never like a scene or anything where he's asking like, what are you do with your spare time? Or like, are you faithful to me? But this
Yeah.
one thing that's like right in front of him, he still can't get over. And I was kind of like frustrated with the character by the end, because when she lets him take it off, she says, you know, I realized he had been a great husband. He's been like flawless, essentially. And
Yeah.
For me, I'm like, no, this is egregious. This is like over the course of like years that he's made you fear for your life. Like he's like looped his finger through the ribbon like multiple times. And like sometimes it's like a scene like I read where he's drunk, but it's usually like when they're having sex and he can't let her have this, even though he doesn't go all the way and rip it off, you know, he's still like upset about it.
You know what the story made me think of is that thing recently about the bear in the woods.
Yeah.
Women choose the bear.
Oh yeah. That was a lot of the comments that I was reading too. Like,
for this story?
Well, it wasn't like direct, but when I would look up like the green ribbon thing, I
Oh,
would see
really?
A lot, like, yeah, anything that's been written about the green ribbon in the last 6 months is referencing the woman and the bear.
That, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Like all the bear's going to do is kill you. And that's not so bad compared to some of the stuff is the point.
Well, yeah, because you know what the bear is going to do.
Yeah.
The man, you don't know.
No.
I couldn't line it up exactly. It didn't feel like it's not the bear thing exactly, but it just reminded me of it. Because it's like something that he doesn't understand about her. And he's trying to, he can't leave it alone. Because a lot of the reaction to the bear thing is like, what do you mean you'd pick a bear? And women are like, you don't get it.
No.
And like men are grappling with this and are trying to figure it out. It's like the green ribbon. You don't get it. Maybe you just can't have it.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe this is not for you. Like maybe you're not meant to get it. It's interesting to me that this story, so I haven't read the whole collection, but this story is called The Husband Stitch. It focuses on, it's not called The Green Ribbon. And like The Husband Stitch is interesting because when they're literally putting her back together after giving birth, they're going to make her body better for him. There's nothing about The Husband Stitch that benefits women, right?
Yeah.
She needs one stitch to be whole. They give her two so that he enjoys it. And it's the same thing with like this ribbon. It's like, this ribbon is what's keeping me together. That's all I need. Just like, let me stay together. But instead he wants to like understand how it works completely, and he doesn't really care what happens to her. He needs to understand. And what's horrible about the scene in the hospital is like she overhears the doctor and the husband talking about the husband stitch. She doesn't consent to it, and she's like in and out of consciousness because they give her a drug after she gives childbirth.
That's rendered so well. I love that scene because the little moment when she's like, it's possible the doctor winked at him.
Yes.
But then she dismisses it, and as a reader you're like, did that really happen?
Right.
No, that didn't really happen. Then later you're like, maybe it did happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure this is exactly how it happens.
I love it when stories can present, like when the character is like out of sorts, like she's, like you said, in and out of consciousness, not really seeing the world as it really is, where you get that sense of confusion, but you also on reflection can understand what actually happened.
Yeah.
Like that is such a, that's got to take a lot of work to figure out how to get just the right details so that you can put those pieces together and still feel confused, to understand
yeah.
and feel confused at the same time.
Right. I feel like when I read scenes like that, and like you said, they're so well rendered, you kind of wonder how they were written. I don't think that this necessarily happened to this writer, but like some of those things I just chalk up to being true. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like they're not
yeah.
fiction. Like this is exactly how something happened either to her or someone that she's heard of. And like, that's why it's like, wow, we know just enough to be confused, not enough to still wonder about it. And like all this stuff, like it's perfectly rendered because it's exactly how it happens.
And I think that's the key, is like, even if it didn't happen, this is how it would happen.
Yeah.
This is exactly what would happen. And that's enough for fiction.
Yeah.
There was something a long time ago, I think it was in a workshop when I was in college, they said something like, there's three questions you ask and the answers are prescribed. The question is, did it happen? No, about the story. This obviously it's fiction. It didn't happen. Could it happen? Yes. So the story has to be something that could happen. And should it happen? Yes. It's fiction, so it didn't happen, but it could happen. And in order to say something about people, this is how it should go down. This is how it should happen.
Right.
And this is what that kind of scene feels like. You're probably right. This probably did happen in real life at some point, but it doesn't matter because it should happen this way.
Yeah, right. Anyway, like she's got those little like asides to the reader, you know, where she's like breaking the fourth wall.
If you're reading this out loud stuff,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's how it starts. If you read the story out loud, please use the following voices. And then there's the scene that I read where it's like, at this point in the story, like shake your can of pennies. And it's not throughout the story. I think if I was her editor, I'd say cut all of these. We don't need them. You know, they're not totally necessary. And unless you do it like throughout the whole book, I don't know what it adds, because this is already, I think, so on the nose in terms of like what what it is we're trying to communicate.
I think what it adds is like a giant Sharpie underline under emotional moments. Like,
Right.
shake the can of pennies at someone in your audience and notice, I forget the exact what it
It's like how
was.
they never look the same at you for all your days or whatever.
That's like putting a Sharpie under her son's reaction. It's like her son just was told not to touch her ribbon, and this is his reaction. It's as if someone shook a can of pennies in his face. I mean, she literally did, and that's why she did, but she wants you to remember that. You know, and so like,
Yeah.
so she's gonna mention it again in this like fourth wall kind of way, where it's like, just take a moment before we move on to the next section and think about what it would feel like if someone shook a can of pennies in your face, just out of nowhere
Right.
or seeming nowhere. So that's why I said it's like a big, thick underline under these
Yeah.
emotional moments.
It reminded me, though, I realized after you mentioned chicken wings that there's that element in chicken wings and her other story
Gator butchering.
for beginners where there's it's like told in second person and it's like giving instructions. So she's like
Yeah.
talking to you, the reader.
How-to manual.
Yeah, it's like a how-to manual. And so like this writer is doing an element of that too, you know, like you said, she's underlining it, but she's also kind of like giving you directions for how to process it.
She's suggesting ways to make the story experience. If you're reading it out loud, this is the scene that's kind of established, is you're if you're reading it out loud, you want to make moments in the story a confrontation with the audience, right? You want to like shake a can of pennies. You want to take them outside and shout their deepest secret to the world.
Right.
In that way, she's kind of making it a confrontation with the reader by forcing the reader to imagine the scene that this audience scene, this like reading out loud scene. It's like, no. I just described to you that we were shaking a can of pennies in his face. Really think about that. Think
Right.
about what it would be like to shake a can of pennies in someone's face and how they would change them.
Yeah. So this is like the line about like how she doesn't think he's a bad person. So like the last scene, like we said, is where he gets to take it off, and it's also like when they're about to have sex. And she says, "Resolve runs out of me. I touch the ribbon. I look at the face of my husband, the beginning and end of his desires all etched there. He's not a bad man, and that I realize suddenly is the root of my hurt. He is not a bad man at all. To describe him as evil or wicked or corrupted would do a deep disservice to him. And yet," and then she says, "Do you want to untie the ribbon?" So like we said, like she knows that he's not a bad guy. He's just got this one hang up, but she still has that line where it says, and yet she still doesn't want it to happen. It still seems unfair. He just doesn't grasp it. I like too how this story focuses very much on the entirety of their relationship. It starts from the first time. Like I think the story starts that way where she's like, I knew I liked him before he did or whatever. And it falls to the end of their relationship where we kind of like assume that she dies or something at the end. Or like this is like, I don't think she can just put her head back on, right? Or else she would
Yeah,
have like
I
taken the
don't think
ribbon
so.
off afterwards. Like at
That's
some
why
point
she's been
sooner.
protecting the ribbon all this time.
Exactly. Yeah. So we can safely assume it's like kind of over, but there's not a whole lot of input from the rest of the world, right? Her parents aren't like, oh, yeah, that's her ribbon. Leave it alone. The rest of the world doesn't like stare at her in public and think, like, what is that? It's so weird. It seems like the only person that can't respect this is him. And so I like that the story kind of is tight that way, right? We just focus on the points in time in there. We can probably assume at least 20-year relationship because they get pregnant pretty soon, but then the kid's off to college. So say call this 20 years. We cover 20 years in 30 pages. And she's just visiting those little scenes where each time he, you know, he learns about the ribbon, he wants to take it off. We have the husband stitch, like she gives birth to the kid. We have the scene that I read, which is followed by the scene with the kid where something fundamental changes in their relationship because now the kid knows there's something about his mother that he can't have. You know, the kid grows up and their relationship changes naturally. And then it's just her and her husband again, and he still can't get over this, right? He has her back to himself again after all this time, and he still can't get over it. But anyway, I've definitely used this as a takeaway before, but my takeaway would very much be like that if you want to tell a story that covers this much amount of time, you can come up with 10 scenes, 5 scenes, however many scenes that just illustrate that one point, you know?
Yeah, this is kind of like what we were talking about at the chicken wings
Yes.
story, right?
Yeah, we love the chicken wings.
It's just a series of scenes that, like you said, just illustrate a central idea. And this story kind of does it. It's a lot with the ribbon. There's like a couple of different things that are working along in the same
Right.
within these scenes. Like, it's not like here's a list of all of the moments in which he tried to touch the ribbon. There's other stuff going on in between as well. It's like their sex life, right? The
Yeah.
development of that, the kid growing up. It's
Yeah.
other little moments that are kind of like part of the whole thing. And some of those collide, like they're all happening in the same scene. There's some of like, because the sex and the ribbon come together quite a lot. But you can, if you pick out those moments, and then they don't have to be all about the the same thing, but then you kind of put them together. You can weave those separate threads like together into a tapestry.
Right. Like you said, it doesn't just have to focus on the ribbons, but like all of the little things that feel like unrelated, they're actually just like they make the story fuller, but they are in a lot of ways like still tightly related. I know we've talked like in our fiction workshop before about how you cover that amount of time, and sometimes when pacing seems off, or when you read a story and you think to yourself like we've really jumped ahead, this is a way that you can do it. I don't think she necessarily set out to cover 20 years. It was probably more like how do I demonstrate this ribbon story, right? So she focuses on that. But point being that you can like a short story can cover a lifetime. We've seen it done over and over again, and usually what's similar is that you go from related scene to related scene to related scene. There's not a whole lot of the stuff that we talk about in screenwriting where it's like you don't have to show the character coming through the door, you just show them in the room. So you don't have to show this wife going through the mundane day-to-day for it to feel as if time has passed. You can just decide to illustrate these 10 or 15 scenes. I guarantee it's something like 15 things.
You start out by saying like the pacing, like one way to think about pacing is like each moment in the story is developing the same kind of ideas. There's like a couple of different things that are just moving forward constantly. But if you were to like move off and talk about like, you get married and you gotta start decorating the house, and there's a whole scene about her learning how to decorate the house, and then nothing happens with that. There's no continuation of that. Like it has nothing to do with anything. That's gonna slow the pace down. It's like picking the right scenes, because if you start adding extra stuff, it's gonna slow the pacing down. It's gonna make it not feel right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like something has to happen for it to feel fast-paced, and nothing happens for it to feel slow-paced.
And the happening is like it's what you pick to be one of those like things that develops throughout. If a scene is just like by itself and like you never return to that idea, then there's no movement in the idea. The movement's static. It never comes back. It never changes.
Yeah, I would want to like amend my comment then. It's not that something's happening, because in your example, she's decorating the house, but like nothing's developing, right? Nothing's changing or like moving forward in terms of like this theme that we've hit on.
I think that's a lot of problems that, like, especially newer writers, you get things that are like they don't know what the story is. So it's like a character just like moving around, kind of like random, kind of Brownian motion. It's just like, okay, they're making breakfast and now they're reading the paper and now they're walking the dog. And you're like, okay, where's the story? What's happening? My takeaway, I did not know when I read this about this being a thing that's been around, common trope about the screen ribbon. So I just thought it was a cool symbol. I was like, what a cool way to kind of symbolize something in the story. It's like almost has that magical realism kind of feel to it, where it's like almost fantastical. I wondered halfway through, like, is she some strange creature, like some
Yeah, exactly.
otherworldly creature? So I just think that like having those little kind of like unexplainable things in a story that symbolize some like aspect of a character, it's like can be really powerful. And it's something to explore in writing. It doesn't have to be like a central theme like the way this is, but they can be little moments.
Well, thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. And for industry news, writing tips, and great short fiction, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/NaplesWritersWorkshop. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.